Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton!
Oh, il s'en fout!
Il passe! C'est terrible! Terrible! Il est là! Jonathan Sexton!
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot! It's gone over the bar!
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
Inviting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
Hello and welcome to the Build Up podcast on Balls.ie here in association with Ladbrokes. My name is Mark Farley and this week Mick is on holidays. I am joined by Donny Mahoney all the way from the land of the USA. Donny, how are you?
Hi there, Mark. Delighted to be here.
Excited to be in the, what do they call it in the business, second chair? Is that what it's called in the pod bid?
All chairs are equal in this podcast, Mark.
All chairs are equal. It's a massive weekend of sport, Donny. I say this every week, but this week, like Saturday could be the biggest sporting day of the year. We've got two massive games for Ireland in two different sports. So I'm very, very excited. I know you're going to be in here on Saturday with me as well. I've already counted down the days to, the Ireland Samoa game, you're looking forward to that with a lot of worry, anxiety, fear, for sense of foreboding, I suppose. But then Ireland against Georgia, you're looking forward to with a sense of worry, anxiety,
fear, foreboding.
Yeah. So, are you excited? Are you ready to go?
I'm pumped. I love a day where the rugby team and the football team play in the same day. There's just something so weird about it.
Yeah.
And it takes me back to 2015. The same Ireland played France, and then Ireland played Poland. They've eaten that against tears, I think. And it's just such a draining, full-on emotional whirlwind that you're taking on these kinds of days. And I think it brings we see how divided the sporting country is at the moment, the rugby haters and these days are great for everybody. They bring us all together. So I'm really excited. And then little things like Japan and Scotland on Sunday, those things will keep us very, very interested.
Yeah, definitely. And even the under-21 game this week as well, and the build-up to it as well. We're going to be talking to Stephen Ferris today about the Ireland-Samoa game. We're also going to be talking to Kevin Doyle, building up to the football one. The first problem I have is trying to pronounce Samoa properly, Donny. It's not Samoa. It's Samoa.
I think this World Cup cycle, everyone has really just embraced and leaned into the Samoa.
Yeah.
Samoa?
I don't know.
Yeah.
it's and for a cabin man, elongating A's is generally not a problem.
Yeah,
so maybe we were right all along.
I don't know. I'm going with, it doesn't feel right saying it on a microphone, but I'm going with Samoa.
Yeah, Samoa. Also, we'll be picking our 1-2-3 picks. It's a difficult one this week with the international games. Donny, you've got a big shout this week, a 25-1 or greater big shout. We have yet to have any success on the podcast with it, so hopefully you're going to bring some fresh ideas.
That's what I'm here for, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Some panache. And also, that same can be said for the NFL picks. Mick usually has the NFL picks every week. As everybody knows, I haven't got a clue, apart from the fact that the Buffalo Bills are definitely going to win the Super Bowl.
Mine too.
But you're going to have three NFL picks against the spread this week.
Three winners, absolutely.
But first of all, before we get into all that, it's time to look back at how we got on last week. Oh, Donny. It was not a good week.
No, it was a bad week.
Now, to be fair, maybe that's because all our predictions seemed to be about 50-1. It was always unlikely that stuff were going to come off.
It was especially a bad week for Mick, and he won't mind me saying this because he's not here and he won't hear this podcast probably. But his bets were way off. Yourself and Sean, you were closer, but still,
yeah.
your intentions were in the right place.
Basically, we accidentally ended up with three big shouts rather than one. We'll get into, when we're talking about the big shout later on, we'll get into Mick's specific one because it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But just to talk with myself and Sean, who are really making just football predictions that happen to be over 25-1.
Mm-hmm.
Sean said Leicester against Liverpool to be a draw, James Maddison to score any time, and there to be over 2.5 goals in the game. He actually ended up with two out of the three.
Yeah.
It's just he needed another Leicester goal for that 2-2 draw. That was 32-1. I had Brighton to beat Spurs. Which everybody laughed me out of it.
You were rubbished for that suggestion. And by 2 o'clock Saturday, you look like the wisest man in all the cabin.
Yes, and with 91 minutes gone in the Leicester-Liverpool game, I looked even wiser, because the second leg of my treble was Leicester and Liverpool to be a draw. I went in to message everybody in work gloating that I was like, we're two legs down, one to go. This is unbelievable. This is on. This is finally going to be a big shout that comes off. Then Liverpool get a penalty that shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. It could have been a two-footed challenge for all I care. It was definitely never... It was never a penalty.
VAR screwed you there.
Yeah, exactly. And then, to be fair, on Sunday, the last leg of my treble was Man United to beat Newcastle. What was I thinking?
Yeah. In hindsight, anytime you get involved with Man United, whether you put your players in your fantasy team or you put money behind them, it never feels right. And you always get caught out. And that's what happened to you, unfortunately.
Stephen Ferris was on with us last week. He had a prediction for the... to be fair to him, he predicted that he liked the idea of Argentina plus 14 against England, but also was like, this is one of those games that England could go out and win this by 25 points. You never know, but Argentina are, you know, they're fighting for their lives. If they lose, they're out. So he ended up going with Argentina plus 14. He was actually closer with his initial prediction of 25 points, because it ended up being a 29-point win. Jason Quigley, thank God, saved face for us a little bit. He had Golovkin by decision at 11-8. So it transpired. Pretty much exactly his prediction for the fight is what happened, in terms of that it was a good test for Golovkin, but in the end, Derevyanchenko just hadn't enough to beat him. And then Mick, his NFL picks did actually do okay. He saved some face there. He had the Bucks. He had the Saints minus 3.5 against the Bucks. They won by 7. He had Raiders plus 5.5 against the Bears. They ended up actually winning by 3.
It's a great pick.
And then he had the Giants against the Vikings plus 5.5. They ended up losing by 18. So that one let him down. But look, as we said, always say, they're one off rather than a treble. So you had 2 out of 3, which isn't too bad. As we always mention, if you are having any bets on these, be sure to gamble responsibly. You can visit dunlewy.net for more information. But I think it's time to get on with the show, Donny. Let's chat to Kevin Doyle about Ireland against Georgia. Kevin, it's a really exciting week for Irish football. What's it like now as an ex-pro? You know, usually you were preparing for these games, you're getting ready to play in them. Now, as a fan, have you got the same excitement level as the rest of us?
I think so. Obviously, you're a lot more detached. You know, when you're a player, you're thinking about, you have your club game, whatever, and you don't think about Ireland games, you're not concentrating on them, and the next minute you play over and you're switched into you know, another squad, another team, and just getting back in with the players for a few days and getting back in to swing of things and how Mick likes to do things. But yeah, as a fan, you're a bit more chilled out and relaxed. You won't be when the games come around, but
so when you're
well used to it now after a year or two.
When you're playing, say, as a club player, like, this is obviously a massive couple of games for you that's going to define this whole qualification campaign. Are you able to switch off and just concentrate on your club? Obviously, there's a lot of jobs. Everyone had a big game this weekend already. Or are you maybe chatting to some of the Irish lads? Is there, are your thoughts kind of already going towards the following week?
No, you're not. Your club games are so important, and you know that they have zero interest in and what your problems are, whether good or bad, your qualification for whatever's going on with your country. They just, everyone at your club involved is, obviously, you know, so intense day to day. Whether you're fighting for promotion or relegation or trying to win a league or whatever it might be, you know, you don't have time to think about it. It's so intense, 2 games a week, whatever it is, you can club. So you just forget about it. You really do switch off. Till you just join up with Ireland, you fly over, you join up, and then you can forget about your club. And it's a nice, fantastic, actually, change to get away from, especially if things aren't going well at your club, to get over to a nicer, usually a nicer, more friendlier atmosphere at home, and then concentrate on something else for a few days.
Kevin, these two fixtures for Ireland that are coming up over the next week, Georgia away, Switzerland away, they're probably the two defining fixtures of the qualifying round for Ireland. When you're trying to prepare for these games, especially when there's two back to back on the road, I mean, is it any different, the mood in camp this week, or is it all sort of trying to keep everything normal?
Yeah, trying to keep everything normal. It will be a bit more, you know, you're getting to the nitty-gritty now near the end of the group, and you can see the end, you can see the light, you can see the possible chance of qualification. So it will be a little bit more serious and intense. You know, two tough games. You know, the Georgia one away is not easy. Everyone struggles there. We always struggle there. So, yeah, I think it is. I do think you start to knuckle down a bit more. It just the pressure ratchets up a bit. You just, everyone's a bit more you know, when it's a year and a half or a year ago when qualifying first started, you know, it seems so far away. And all of a sudden, you're near the end of the group and you're in touch and you've done so well this far, you can mess it up now the next week. And you do feel that, I think, in the camp. You won't say it, you won't admit it, but it's really just another week and you'll say all that, but it'll be just a little bit more serious. Mick will be try to be normal, but he'll be feeling it as well. Everyone, the coaches will all be just a little bit more, without even probably wanting to be, just naturally going to be a little bit more switched on, I suppose, or a bit more adrenaline flowing a bit more when it gets this close to it.
Talk to us a little bit about your own experience playing against Georgia, because we're talking about comparing it being a player to being a fan. As fans, there's the unwanted joke of, Jesus Christ, we've drawn Georgia yet again in a group. You obviously scored against them in 2008 in the qualifying campaign over in Georgia. It's the old cliche that it's a very difficult place to go. What was it like as a player over there?
I think that 2008 one might have been played in Germany.
Oh yeah, Mainz. Yeah.
I'm not 100% certain. I've played there as well in Georgia, but I think that game was in Germany in another weird random one, because the stadium was basically empty from Ireland fans, but it was a weird big stadium, and the atmosphere was weird. We won the game. I think it was Trapattoni's first qualifier in charge.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So there was that pressure itself. It was intense because of that. You know, new manager and everyone trying to perform and do well and start a group off with them. So, but I just always, you know, I'd always speak to people afterwards after we played Georgia, especially away from home. Not Georgia, but different teams away from home. That is just not easy. It's not, you know, everyone just thinks you're going over there and you're going to win the game, and it's so difficult. They're usually, you fly in, you're a different hotel, switch around, different stadium you're played in, sometimes whatever the service might be, whatever it is, you're just out of your comfort zone, and none of those games are easy, and they seem to be able to play really well. Just larger, but teams like them seem to be able to play really well in their home turf, and, you know, they get that bounce from it, and we've always struggled, and I found it difficult to do well. Every team sort of does. It's not just us. You know, you go through the group and everyone sort of struggles a little bit. And where were we with Trapattoni? He was with Kazakhstan. We played him and we won in the last minute, and it was on a plastic pitch and it was just terrible condition. And we got vilified for not performing well out there and only winning 2-1. And it was early on in the group, and as it turns out, everyone else in the group went there and really struggled after. So, you know, it turned out to be quite a good result for us at the time when you look back on it. So it's just tough. It's not easy. Travel involved, lots of games. And there's no one, you know, I suppose apart from Gibraltar, which we struggled badly against, there's no one really easy to play against. You know, when they're international teams, if the manager's decent, they're well organised. It's just tough to play against teams. As long as they've got good, everyone behind the ball, it doesn't matter. I could put my local men's soccer team here in Wexford and organise and put them all behind the ball, and you'd struggle for a long time to, you know, if everyone just deciding you're going to camp out or whatever. And, well, in fairness to Georgia, they've actually played well against us and played some good football in the past, in the last campaign, I think it was, when they possessed us and outplayed us. So, you know, you can't just lump that and say they put everything on behind the ball and they just defend. They do go out and try to play, and we just struggle away from home, difficult place. And that's why I really fear this one more than Switzerland. I just think this could be the one that we slip up with. Everyone seems to be talking about Switzerland and sort of half forgetting about Georgia. I know after the last game, everyone was on about playing Switzerland and sort of like leapfrogging the Georgia game, and that's the one that will get you, if you're thinking of that.
Interesting note, Kevin, on that game in 2008 in Mainz, Ireland 2, Georgia 1. You scored also on the score sheet that day for Ireland was Glenn Whelan, who will be starting, we believe, on Saturday afternoon in Tbilisi. Kind of an amazing career that Glenn has had, and the longevity is astounding.
Yeah, I got on to him. He's never ran fast enough to bring himself out. He is out of that. That was his first goal, I think, for Ireland that game. And all along, he's not, you know, he's had a sort of a, I suppose, you know, he's been regarded as a really good midfielder. He's went through a bad spell where people were giving him stick, and he stuck out. He keeps turning up. He keeps playing really well. And he's played really well in this group so far. He's been sort of like a steady in hand there, some experience. And Mick has brought him back in. He never, as he said himself, he never did retire. He was retired by the previous management. So I got on very well with Glenn, and he's he's someone who's aged and plays better as he gets older. And no, and not making a joke of it, he never had a great pace to lose or anything like that. So he can play for a good few more years, and he'll as long as he wants. He doesn't get injured. He just stays week after week, and just a really good, calming influence. Great around the place as well, outside of the football. Young and older players, and yeah, I was, you know, we roomed together all the way back under 18, under 19 level for Ireland, and came up all through those years. So great respect for Glenn and for him to be still doing it now at 35-ish or so, and not looking any worse for wear is a fantastic achievement.
What are your thoughts on the squad going into this game? Obviously, we've got a good few injuries at the back, especially, and also the Aaron Connolly thing, which is, I suppose, a bit odd from our side looking in, that, you know, last week Mick was talking about not having him in the senior squad. Obviously, he comes on, he scores, starts at the weekend, scores twice, completely changes everything. But do you think that means now that he's there as a real, if Mick's bringing him, he obviously thinks he's going to play him, so he must be a real prospect, that he's going to get some game time.
Well, just looking at him play the other day, I haven't really seen much of him, and seeing him play the other day, he just looks to be, you know, right at it, right up to the level he needs to be. Fantastic goals, obviously, helps matters. And, you know, I don't think we have the time to be bedding in strikers and giving them a few games in a friendly in 6 months and whatever like that and giving them a chance to experience. He's playing in the Premier League. He's playing in front of whatever it was, probably 30 or 40,000 people at the weekend. You know, that playing away to Georgia is not going to be, you know, a mind-blowing experience for him. That way, playing for his country, his senior team would be, you know, the whole other side, but dealing with press, dealing with all that, and the players he's playing against won't be a big issue. So, full of confidence, I'd imagine he's on top of the world. So, you can make that argument for playing him. We're not full of options with injuries and people out of squads. You know, I suppose that would be the exciting side of it as well. Seeing someone like that come through, you know, we're talking about Troy Parrott and waiting to get him up and giving him another year or two. Well, there we have someone who's doing it right now, who did it at the weekend of Premier League. Obviously, it's his first start and he scored a couple of goals. You want to see how it pans out over the next couple of years. But right now, it's something for us to get excited about, which we sort of don't really have a whole lot of young players, especially the set forwards coming through, where we're really excited about. You give a boost to the squad as well, a fresh face in there, and that helps. I don't think Mick will start him, but it wouldn't surprise me. Just with the injuries, he might have no choice.
Kevin, who would you start up front if you were managing Ireland this weekend? We've seen, it looks like McGoldrick won't be available. The options aren't, there's not a lot of them. Who's going to get us that goal that's going to get us the 3 points?
I would have started Shane Long, but that's obviously not happening. that would have been my, like, he started for Southampton in the Premier League at the weekend.
I saw that.
That was the worry with me, Mick not picking him in the last squad, and Mick can be quite stubborn. When he didn't pick him in the last squad, we did well not picking him in this one. But then Dave McGoldrick goes and gets injured, and, like, you know, there's your person to play. He mightn't have been flying form or anything like that, but he's still at a Premier League club, and if he's not playing, he's coming on off the bench. So, and he's Ireland's top scorer in that current sort of squad by a long, long, long way. So that one, I think Mick is sort of messed up with. But with Shane not being there, I thought Scott Hogan did well. The bits I saw of him in the last couple of games when he did play for him, but he hasn't been playing at club level, and Mick says he doesn't want to play lads who haven't been playing at club level. So, does he play Sean McGuire? I would say he'd play Scott Hogan. But again, I don't know. He surprised me with some of his decisions. So, I would say, looking at the last few games and who he's played and who's done well for him, probably Scott Hogan. Again, he's not going to be fully match fit. He hasn't played a whole lot of games this season. So it's a tough one for us. It's a position that has been for a few years, been a difficult one. But, I just think he's missing out with Shane Long there and his experience away from home. I just think he would have been ideal.
Yeah, I think if that is the case, then at least you've McGuire coming off the bench to provide a bit of energy. And he's obviously getting battling goals the last few weeks as well.
He scored a few goals as well. I just don't know if we play the one up front, the number nine sort of one, we're away from home, and I don't know if Sean is the one for that role. I think he'd be better at home, and maybe if you're going to play one up front away from home against them, I don't know. I think Scott Hogan might offer more in regards to hold up and getting in behind play, and just more of an all round one, where Sean maybe needs, and maybe I'm being harsh on him, but I feel he needs another guy with him, or you know, less of a responsibility to have to hold the ball up and bring other people to play, which I think the centre forward is going to get on Thursday.
So, Kevin, we can't let you go without getting a prediction. How do you think the Georgia game is going to go? Are we going to get the 3 points?
I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it'll be very close. I think we might get lucky and nick a 2-1 away win, but I would not be surprised with a 1-1 draw. Just we struggle to break teams down and away from home, at home, whatever. And I just think it's a real banana skin one for us. But, you know, we have got some luck. We rode our luck into Lacking a little bit. We were good against Switzerland, but we got away a few things, and hopefully that bit of luck continues with us and we win 2-1.
Cool, 2-1 away win, a 17-2 on Ladbrokes. So that's nice odds. And like, we actually were talking about this in the office as well. We're like, geez, every Ireland George game seems to end up 2-1. So that's not a bad
bet. Yeah, safe prediction.
Thanks very much, Kevin. Hopefully it goes well for us. Great stuff there from Kevin. It's such a worrying game, Georgia, always. But sure, sometimes you wonder, I worry a little bit. Like, we're always talking about how hard a place it is to go and they can bet, but we do generally beat them.
Yeah, we do. But like, the problem is, say the Switzerland game, I think Kevin's right about this. All we have to do is get a draw there. And Ireland, if they know, you know, if Ireland knows how to do anything, it's how to get a draw in the match. But like, to actually have to go and win a game, I think that's why this fixture is so, so difficult. And like, if we do win it, it really puts us in driver's seat. So it's we need it. But it's going to be hard. I'm thinking back to, remember the game in 2014 in Tbilisi, and Aidan McGeady scored those amazing goals the day of the 2014 hurling final. Like, but it took genius for us to beat Georgia that day. And it often takes some kind of inspiration, it's a weird place to play. It's a weird place to, it's a weird atmosphere. I don't know. It's always really dark there. It always seems like
when the game's on. That's a good point.
It seems like darker than anywhere else. But I don't know. Like, when you hear Kevin talk about the forward options and making the case for Shane Long, it's really like, God, we have to win this game. We have to score a goal. But who's going to do it? I don't know. James Collins didn't get a shot there. I think he's going to end up starting. And can we win? I don't know.
I think it is primed for either Shawnee Maguire or Aaron Connolly to come off the bench and provide some little bit of magic. But like, it's that old cliche, I think, again, of looking at like the Georgians, they'll start to maybe, we nick a late goal because they'll start to tire or whatever. Whereas, as Kevin said, if you're just camped in behind the ball and, you know, giving up, put up a good resistance, it's very hard to break down. And Georgia aren't going to just do that, as he mentioned. They're going to come with they're well able to play football, probably even as well as, if not better than us, technically sometimes. It's time for 1-2-3 though, Donny. This is the chance with Ladbrokes to win €100 cash by correctly predicting the scores of three of this weekend's matches. The Ireland-Georgia game does not feature. So whatever your prediction of that one is, it doesn't matter. You need to worry about is Scotland against San Marino, Wales against Croatia, and Bulgaria against England. This is a tough week. As we mentioned, if you haven't heard before, the Ladbrokes 1-2-3 game, you can play it for free on ladbrokes.com. If you correctly predict the score of one of the three matches they've chosen, you get a €1 free bet. If you correctly predict the score of two of them, you get a €5 free bet. And if you get all three right, you win €100 cash. And if you do it this week, you're a decent Oracle, would you say? Because it's very hard to pick out correct scores in these games. Scotland against San Marino, I'm going to task you with that one first, Donny.
God, you're throwing me in at the deep end with this. This is impossible stuff. This is really hard. Scotland, San Marino. I mean, we could talk about it for a bit or not, but I mean, somehow Scotland are second last in their qualifying group, in a group that includes Kazakhstan and Cyprus. So Scottish football is not where it used to be. San Marino are propping up the bottom of the table there. Just going on form, you'd have to say Scotland 2-0 is probably the safest bet. So I would go Scotland 2-0.
2-0. Yeah, it's like, it's one of, if we, like, Scotland mirror Ireland in so many ways. And like, a couple of campaigns ago for the last Euros, they would have probably, the Scottish version of the build-up podcast would have been talking about how they're, you can't guarantee a win against Georgia and and how that would have unraveled for them. And on the other hand, we'd always also be going into a San Marino game, not confident that we're going to score a bag of goals.
Exactly.
I'm going to go a little bit more brave here. I'm going to say Scotland 3-0 for San Marino.
It seems like a good bet. I mean, Scotland have only scored 5 times 6 games so far. So, you'd wonder if they have the firepower in them. But yeah, San Marino have conceded 28, so 3-0 probably might come through.
Wales at home to Croatia hasn't been the greatest of campaigns so far for Ryan Giggs. They lost narrowly to them away, though. I'm going to go here. I think Wales might actually snatch a draw. I'm going to say, but they're going to get it hard to get a goal. What will I go for here? I think I go 1-1. 1-1 yeah. Croatia and Wales.
I originally had 1-1, then I looked at a little bit more at the table. Croatia, serious team, very reliable. Wales, not in the form that they were 12 months ago, so I'm going 2-1 Croatia away.
2-1 Croatia. You're probably going to be right. But look, I'm just, you know, the little romantic in me is like, this is again, Ireland and Wales, a lot of comparisons you can draw, and they get a heroic 1-1 draw. And finally then, Bulgaria against England. Bulgaria are useless. Apologies to any of our Bulgarian listeners listeners out there, but you are bottom of that group. England are running away with it. I'm going to say, what do I say here? A 3-0 away win for England.
I think you're in the right ballpark there, but and England are putting up hockey scores on teams. I'm going to go 5-1 England.
5-1?
Yeah.
That's a brave call. If you get this right now, you will truly deserve the €100.
Thanks very much.
If you know any better yourself, to get on to ladbrokes.com right now. You can play the game for absolutely free. And as we mentioned, you can win €100 cash if you correctly predict all three scores. Donny, it's time to talk rugby. Let's start. We chatted to Stephen Ferris on Tuesday evening about Ireland, Samoa, about Japan and Scotland, about our fate in this Rugby World Cup. Have we any hope left? Let's see what Stephen had to say. Stephen, last week we were fairly depressed after the Japan game. The Russia match, it didn't inspire too much hope either. What was your take on the game? We got there in the end, got the bonus point, but we made hard work of it.
Yeah, we certainly did. Apologies for my voice. I'm actually starting to lose my voice. I think I've been talking too much rugby over the last 3 or 4 weeks, but I think there's a lot of people are on the same boat. Lads, I think it was, to give you a straight up answer, I think it was disappointing. I really thought I was going to see a bit of a bounce back from Ireland. You know, when you don't play well and you get beat, you're looking for a reaction, and I'm not really sure if we've seen that reaction. I know it was a really quick turnaround of 4 days to play in Russia, but I actually thought Russia probably played some better rugby than we did. You know, I thought that we just looked like a team that is struggling for confidence. We looked anxious at times, and, you know, in big games like quarterfinals, if you're going to play like that, you know, there's only going to be one outcome. But I believe that with this 10-day break that they've had, you know, a chance to recharge the batteries and, you know, maybe put in a performance against Samoa like we witnessed in the first game against Scotland, which gives us all a lot of hope. But to come back to that game against Russia, I just thought that, you know, I was expecting so much more considering, you know, the defeat against Japan, and I really was looking at a reaction. And unfortunately for all the Irish fans watching on it, as you said there, it didn't really fill us full of confidence. And, you know, a 35 or 6 point win, whatever it was, you probably expected it to be double that. But everybody's coming out and saying they got the job done. We got 5 points. That's the main thing. You know, they played what was in front of them, and that's fair enough. But, you know, you look at the way South Africa, New Zealand, and even England are dispatching teams of a similar quality. You know, it just shows, from my own personal opinion, that we're just not hitting our straps yet.
A lot was made of the conditions, the humidity, the ball was so slippery. Have you ever played in a match like that? And can it really have a detrimental effect, not just in terms of maybe that, you know, obviously there's the obvious errors if you drop the ball, you know, things like that happening, but also maybe that it's weighing on your mind all the time, that you're concentrating so much on those simple skills you don't have to think about, that maybe that can have an effect even beyond what we can obviously see with the naked eye.
Yeah, no, I think it is weighing on their minds. I think it's weighing on a lot of teams' minds, just not Japan's. They're used to the conditions. I was involved in an under-21 game in Durban in South Africa, and it was really, really humid. It was like 35 degrees. It was more the sweat on the ball, you know, the sugar and the salt that's in your sweat going onto the ball, and it's almost, it's slipper than it is if it's pissing down with rain. Like, it really is like a bar of soap. And I can remember, personally, in that game, I had a couple of knock-ons. I can sympathise with the lads. That I'm sure it is horrendous. And when you're standing there about to receive the ball, you're maybe not thinking about what's, you know, the next phase or two phases ahead. All you're doing is trying to catch the ball itself and go forward. And it's not just catching the ball, guys. It's when you catch the ball and get into contact that one little nudge in the ball can dislodge it from your arm or, you know, carrying it in two hands. And, you know, so I definitely agree with you. I think the lads are, it's in the back of their minds that, you know, they really got to be secure with the possession. And that's really noticeable within Ireland is that, you know, there's been uncharacteristic mistakes made, especially with handling errors and the kicking game with the aerial battle as well. Just too many turnovers, too many mistakes, and it's something that we're not used to seeing.
Stephen, can you tell us a bit about what it's like as a player on these tours when you're so far from home? I mean, the lads left on the 11th of September. It's it's basically been a month that they've been in Japan, and it's such a long time to be away from home. And we're trying to figure out, you know, how they can play their way back into some kind of form. But I just wonder a bit, like, what is it like when you're away for that long? And does it start to get into your head a bit, just inevitably just living out of hotel rooms and being on the go and being so far from your families? Is it, what, in 2011 when you guys were in New Zealand, what's the experience like as you head into this sort of last group game weekend before the quarterfinals kickoff?
Yeah, it's brilliant, lad. You're away from the missus. of course, it can be very tough. Other people can just jump on a plane and go to the other side of the world, and it's totally fine. Others can get homesick very easily. I was chatting, I think, at the end of last week, talking about, you know, rugby overload and making sure that Joe uses his 10 days to make sure lads get away from rugby and, you know, go and do things with each other, enjoy each other's company. And it's not just being bogged down with rugby. And people were replying to me saying, these guys are getting paid hundreds of thousands of pounds every year to go out and play rugby and do a job. What are you on about being bogged down and about having too much rugby and having too much information and everything else? I think some people kind of misunderstood my point. It's like anything. If it gets on top of you, you're not going to perform as well. Like if you guys are in work 24/7 for 3 days in a row, but on the third day, your standard of work and your level of work isn't going to be as good as it was on the first day. And I think that's the point I was trying to make. That rugby overload, it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing. It's going in, sitting on laptops, just constantly being having this information thrown at you. And you know, in 2015, I know for a fact the guys were feeling like that because I spoke to some of the guys that were on the tour or on the World Cup trip. So, you know, it's finding a balance, and everybody needs to get let off a bit of steam. Secondly, get out of that camp environment, and you know, just get away from work for a few hours. I think that's vitally important. And whether that's get away from work and spend it with your family, who's maybe flown over for a week, and you go out for dinner or go and do some things with them or girlfriends or partners or whatever it may be, that is vitally important. And even look at the English management, they've said, yes, no problem. Wives, families, partners, whatever, bring them out. They're more than happy for them to be socializing with the team. I think that's important. But to go back to your point, Donnie, it can be hard being away from home for so long. I can remember Bruno Guerra when we first arrived in Queenstown in New Zealand, and he was, you know, FaceTiming or Skyping his wife and his three kids at the time. And, you know, they're getting up for breakfast at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're about to head to bed at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And it's just that vicious circle of coming round, and everybody's in different time frames and trying to make things work and having family at home to keep them happy, but also making sure that your main focus is trying to win a Rugby World Cup. So it's a great point to make. It really is.
This game this weekend coming up, what are you looking for in it? I suppose it's a weird one because it's kind of almost out of our hands. Obviously, you're just kind of wanting to get this game over and done with and then move on to seeing what happens against with Japan and Scotland on Sunday. Selection-wise, we don't have the team yet that Joe has picked, but again, we talked about this last week, it's hard to know what you can really learn from these games and maybe who's in form. There's probably still question marks over the back row. What are your first choice back row going into that quarter final? I suppose maybe we learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think we will. I believe that Robbie Henshaw is going to start. That's the word coming out of camp. You know, I think if he didn't start, what the bloody hell was he even on the trip for? You know, in the squad, if he doesn't start this game. So I think he will start this game. And, you know, other guys are picking up their hand. Well, Rob Carney got another opportunity. There's a couple of times in that Russia game where he just didn't look himself, you know, just letting balls bounce and making a few mistakes. Will he get another opportunity, or will Jordan Warner be called upon? Because, you know, Jordan's certainly putting a lot of pressure on him, especially after his performance in the Scottish game. So, yeah, when it comes to team selection, I think the front five picked itself at the minute, lads. I think, you know, Ian Healy, Rory Best, Pike Furlong, Henderson, and Bryan picked themselves. They'll be fresh. They'll be ready to go. They'll hopefully bring a physicality that we didn't see in the last two games. And an energy. There didn't seem to be any energy at all in the last two games. Maybe that's just the fatigue, the conditions, or whatever it is. But the Northern Hemisphere teams definitely seem to be suffering a little bit, especially in the final 20, 30 minutes with the conditions. But yeah, team selection is going to be an interesting one. I'd love to see Johnny Sexton run out and play 80 minutes. I'd love you to tell me when the last time Johnny Sexton played 80 minutes in a game of rugby was. Probably about 5 or 6 months ago. So for me, you know, if Ireland are going to go on and win a quarter final, he's going to need to play 80 minutes in a quarter final for Ireland to do that. So I'd love to see him get 80 minutes. Conor Murray, play him as long as he wants to stay out there and try and get some continuity and some relationships and some options together and try and get this wheel turning.
And how would you pick the back row, Stephen? And there's not many back rowers left there, but. Would you pick a back three looking with an eye to the quarterfinal, or would you hope to keep the same three guys for the whoever we play, South Africa or New Zealand?
No, I think I would if I was putting my hand up for selection for a quarterfinal, I would probably want to play this game. I would want to get 70-80 minutes under my belt so that I feel like I'm cooking come the quarterfinal. There's been a lot been said about Peter Omani, and you know, the way the breakdown has been refereed at the minute, is he a little bit of a liability? I've seen Mike Tindall said that after the Japan game. He doesn't seem to be at the top of his game. Like, you know, it's not the Peter Omani we saw against New Zealand, you know, 18 months ago, 2 years ago. So, but his experience that he brings in the big matches, that I think you can't leave him out. You know, you can't play somebody like Tyburn because he doesn't have that big game experience. Mm-hmm. So I would go with Josh Van der Fleer, Peter Omani, and, you know, I don't think there's anybody else but TJ Stander could play number 8, unless Rhys Ruddock's going to stick his hand up. And yeah, I think that's the way Joe's going to go. I think he's pretty predictable with his team selection in big matches, and I could nearly guarantee, you know, if the small game wasn't being played this weekend and Ireland were playing in the World Cup quarterfinal, with what's happened over the last 3 weeks, I believe he would go with Van der Fleer, Omani and Stander.
Are we being a little presumptuous thinking we're going to get this bonus point win with Samoa? Is there anything that would have you slightly worried? We saw Japan beat them last weekend by 19 points. Again, a few weeks ago we were right, you know, we're just look completely past this game, but do we need to kind of concentrate and make sure we have all our ducks in a row first?
I think the way Ireland's game plan is and has been, especially over the last year, the way they like to keep the ball in play a lot and just trick it up. And, you know, some very interesting stats that, you know, Ireland have, on average, I think it's 135 carries per game. And of those 135 carries, they're averaging 433 metres per game. And the only teams below that on the average are Russia, USA, Tonga, and Samoa, like, and then Ireland are the next. So all these carries that we're making, we're not actually making any ground. And those other teams that I mentioned are the only teams behind us. The forwards are only making on average 1.6 meters per carry in the games. Where you look at the English side, they're making on average 3.2. That's double the amount of meters their forwards are making. But if I go back to the game plan, I feel if Ireland go in this multi-phase, 7, 8, 9, 10 phases, that will play into their hands, because this Samoan outfit will tire and they won't be able to keep up with that. And it doesn't matter if they're making 1.5 metres each carry, you know, they'll burn them out and they'll get them on the outside and they'll get overlaps and they'll get numbers up. But it's that big if, guys. It's that big if of being able to hold on to the ball, because we've just seen of late that there has been so many mistakes, not just with Ireland's performances, but with all the other teams, with the handling errors due to the conditions. But to sum all that up, I think, you know, Ireland, what I want to see from them is a really dominant performance. Like, a really, this is where we're at. We're coming into a quarter final, all guns blazing. This is what Ireland's all about. Instead of the last two matches where everybody's sort of scratching their heads, and geez, if we go into a quarter final like the way we played in the last two games, you know, we're going to come out the wrong end of it. So yeah, it's just a dominant performance of, you know, a good victory and a good brand of rugby, and, you know, keep those mistakes down.
Looking ahead then to the game, the Japan-Scotland game, which is for the neutral a massive game this weekend, and obviously people will be up for it, and for us we'll be a little bit worried about, depending on the result. How do you see it going? I'm just looking here in Ladbrokes. Scotland are 8-11, slight favourites. Japan are 6-5. Donny was saying it here on the podcast. He's like, you know, are people still kind of sleeping on how good this Japan team are?
Yeah, I think so. So Scotland play tomorrow against Russia. And then they have a really quick turnaround to play against Japan, where Japan have, I think it's 8 days rest from their last game to the Scottish game. So for me, that is huge. Absolutely huge. You look at the games that have went by. Australia played Fiji. It was a pretty tight game for the most part. 4 days later, or 3 days later, Fiji had to play, and they get turned over by Uruguay. You know, I think these really, really quick turnarounds have a massive impact on level of performance, and for me to hear there that Scotland are favourites, considering the way firstly Japan are playing, but also with the quick turnaround, I think I would be backing Japan all day long.
Good stuff. 6-5 was interesting. Obviously, like we're saying, I think for us it's hard to know what you want, because like you're looking at such a dominant performance by South Africa again today, like. There is an, you know, it's almost kind of the point now where it's much of a muchness between New Zealand and South Africa on who we would actually get in the quarterfinal. Who would you prefer?
Yeah, you know what? I want to see Japan. I want to see Japan beat Scotland. I want to see Scotland dumped out. I think Scotland talk it up all the time of, you know, this is the best preparation they've ever had. They're playing the best rugby and blah, blah, blah. They're just a team that always bigs themselves up but never deliver. And you know, it was the same when I played against them also, so they always get one big scalp here or there, but I think they're a team that's gone backwards over the last 18 months. I'm not sure why that is, considering the players that they have. You know, Glasgow's dominance in the Pro 14, you know, it's only Leinster really that can keep up with them, but it just doesn't translate into the international team. So yeah, I want Japan the win. I want them to beat Scotland, and you know, I think it would be, first of all, be brilliant for the host nation to get through to a quarter final, but secondly, I think Japan deserve it. I think the way that they've actually went about their business, they deserve to be there. They've been the best team to watch in the group. They've played the best brand of rugby. You know, take out the first 30 minutes of the game against Russia, where I'm sure they were very, very nervous opening the whole of the Rugby World Cup. Japan have been probably one of the best teams in the tournament. So, yeah, I think Japan are going to go through along with Ireland. And who do you want to face? Well, neither of them would be brilliant. But for me personally, I think Ireland would be better suited to playing against South Africa. I think with the line speed that they have, Ireland's kicking game could really cause them problems. You look at Ireland's tries, they've scored 6 out of their 11 tries through their kicking game. You know, one of those was a regather from a restart, but all the rest of them are from kicks. So, you know, it just shows how much the kicking game means to Ireland and going forward against South Africa with their rush line speed. I feel that that could be a gem that they could keep up their sleeve and maybe spring a shot. But if you beat South Africa, do I think Ireland have the firepower and manpower to go on and win a Rugby World Cup? I think Ireland are definitely capable of one big game in them. To have 3 in a row, I'm just not quite sure at the minute.
Thanks a million, Stephen. Look, it's going to be a brilliant weekend, and hopefully we can enjoy it and get out the other side to you.
Absolutely. Cheers, lads. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Stephen.
Interesting stuff there from Stephen, as always. Donny, it's such a weird one, because if you're a neutral going into this Japan-Scotland game, like, it's a shame it's in our group, because you'd just be all in on Japan, like Stephen is there. It's just that thing that we also don't want to play New Zealand in a quarterfinal. So
I know, it's... I think, and the way the tournament's going, I mean, as much as I would love to see Ireland win a quarterfinal, just so I never have to hear anybody have to talk about Ireland losing every World Cup quarterfinal that they ever played in. The sentimental sports fan in me is really getting behind this Japan team, and really wants, you know, and I really want to see a Japan South Africa game, rematch of the 2015 match. Like, one that's already one of the most famous World Cup games ever in rugby history. So you get a sort of a replay of that in four years later in Japan. Like, that's the game. You think of those quarterfinals, if we get them, I think it's the most likely outcome. Ireland versus New Zealand, South Africa versus Japan. Those are two pretty awesome games, even if it means Ireland are gone. I think, you know, like, sometimes you just gotta take the green shirt off, take the green mankini off, and just say, this is what the tournament needs. This is what rugby needs.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that as a soccer nation, we're usually always the, what would you call it, the plucky underdog that all the neutrals are going for, and it isn't lovely to see them getting through the group or whatever, whereas now we're the villain of the piece, and everybody else is. But although Scotland are really the villain of the piece, and it's great that Stephen managed to get in a dig or two at Scotland, because it's well deserved. If we go out of this tournament, even if we lose to Samoa, at least we'll have Scotland.
Exactly. I mean, we'll always have that win. And like, even if we go out and get hammered 60-0 to New Zealand in the quarterfinal, most likely Scotland are going home on Sunday, and sayonara, as they say.
Well done, Sharpie.
Come on, Chesson.
All right, hold it. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't. Bloody.
Big shout time yet again, Donny. Your chance, my chance, and more importantly, our listeners' chance to win themselves two cakes and a sports biography by correctly predicting something that's going to happen this weekend that has odds of 25-1 or greater. It's a task put to the people every week. We've had a couple of entries last week. Again, none of them came close to coming off. In fact, some people, every team they back seemed to lose. That the same can be said for Mr. Mick McCarthy, who was on the pod last week and went with a rugby fourfold that was downright embarrassing.
Yeah, shocking.
It was unbelievable. So let's go through them here, right? He went with Ireland to beat Russia by between 51 and 60 points. That was 3-1 on its own. This is part of his fourfold. Ireland ended up winning with 35 points. You can forgive him in one sense, but the same sense, he just watched Ireland against Japan.
In the same podcast, he talked about how poor Ireland had been and was complaining about them. What did he think was going to change?
Yeah, I don't know where he was going with that one. Then he had Italy to beat the spread against Australia. Based off the fact that if Italy lost... New Zealand, I should say. Based off the fact that if Italy lost, they were pretty much out. It was the spread was plus 29 points. Italy lost by 49 points.
I mean, some bad luck in that. I mean, I think if I had to be Mick, he'd say, well, if all those injuries don't happen to the front rows on the Italian team, maybe it'd be a different game, but come on.
Yeah.
Why are you backing against the All Blacks? They're always going to do you.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he was unfortunate with the red card as well, but look, it could have been worse. Could have had two. He should have had two. England against Argentina, he'd gone for between 1 and 12-point win. As we talked about earlier on, England ended up winning that by 29 points.
Oops.
Bit of a disaster there, Mick. And then finally, this is the most heartbreaking for him of all. Samoa against Japan, he'd gone for Samoa plus 19. They lost 38-19, so it was a draw on the handicap.
Jesus. And that was that injury time or added time try that broke his heart. So, I mean, do you guys give awards? I know you were talking last week about how if you flip these, the big shout, and you took the opposite bets, sometimes they work out better. Do you give out two Jaffa cakes if you get everything wrong.
Yeah, he had actually. It was funny that he mentioned it last week. He was like, "This is if you went for all the opposite of these." So, in a way, he actually won the big shout.
Exactly. So, for listeners, when Nick's back next week, he'll give you his big shout and just do the opposite four bets or three bets, and you can book a little holiday for yourself.
So, Donnie, this week you're tasked with it. It's got to be 25-1 or greater. Did you enjoy the process, first of all? And secondly, are you proud of what you've come up with?
I didn't enjoy it because it was just difficult. It was strenuous. It took me about 4 days of work to make the right choice. You know, I had to enlist a lot of statisticians and betting experts, make a lot of phone calls. So it was hard work, hard graft. I think I like it, though. I mean, I think all bets before they are made, there's a little bit of the optimism is very hard to sort of to get away from. And I'm feeling quite happy with this. I'm surprised I've got it for the price that I have. But I'm confident. But I mean, I think the lesson of this podcast is that you should never be confident with your betting. But, okay, hear me out. First pick, first bet. Japan to beat Scotland by between 1 and 10 points, 13-5. Now, here's my thinking here. Japan are going to beat Scotland. We heard Stephen talk about the four-day turnaround there that Scotland are going to have to deal with. The bookies really don't rate Japan, but I think they're going to win this game. They're at home. They have the momentum. They're playing well. Scotland are in tatters. I just think that's a Japan win, but it's not. Japan aren't going to win by 20, you know?
Yeah.
I think 10 points is all they need. That's a kind of, if you're thinking, Japan are going to win the group, because remember, they don't want to play New Zealand either. There's huge incentives in them for beating Scotland. And I want to say that Scotland knocked them out of the World Cup group in 2015 as well. So there's revenge there. They want to win it. Japan winning by less than 10 points or 10 or less, I think is doable. So that's 13-5. So that's pick number one. Okay. Ireland, Georgia. Big game at the weekend, obviously. It's going to be a nail biter. It's going to be anguish. It's going to be pain. Going to be torture.
Without a doubt.
If we know anything about Ireland, Georgia fixtures, here's what we know. When Ireland play in Georgia, they've done that four times away from home this century. Three of those four games have finished Georgia 1, Ireland 2. Now, Kevin Doyle, if you read between the lines of what he was saying, I think he fears a draw here. You know, that maybe Ireland might be looking ahead to the Switzerland game. Ireland beating anybody is really hard. Scoring more goals than anybody is going to be really difficult for Ireland. Scoring any goals is going to be difficult for Ireland. But I think it's going to be a nail-biter victory for Ireland. And if we know anything about Ireland under Mick, is that we don't score goals early anymore. We score them late. So the days of the Shane Duffy fifth-minute goal and then hold on for dear life for 85 minutes, those days are gone. I think it's going to be a draw at halftime, and I think Ireland are going to come out on top somehow. So I'm back in the Ireland-Georgia draw at halftime, full-time Ireland win at 18-5.
Nice. So you're thinking maybe, if you're going with Kevin's 2-1 prediction, maybe exactly. That it's 1-1 at halftime, 2-1 exactly. Ireland in the end. The likelihood of getting three goals in one half of football between Ireland and Georgia, I would say, is slim to nil.
Yeah. I could. There's
a cheeky 1-0. Take that.
Right. Okay. There's a few ways. There's two ways that could come through, and I think it's possible. Now, the third pick, Denmark versus Switzerland. Huge game for Ireland, obviously. I don't know a whole lot about Denmark, and I don't know a whole lot about Switzerland other than what I've seen them against Ireland, and they both seem pretty handy when they play against Ireland. I think they both have a few classy players up front. I think they're both going to score. So if you do Denmark versus Switzerland, both teams to score, get that at 10-11. That's my third pick. Add those three up. You get 30-1. That's my big shot.
30-1. I like it because Denmark, Switzerland, both of them are capable of conceding goals. You don't have to be a great attacking team to score a goal against Denmark or Switzerland, evident by the fact that Ireland scored against both of them. So I do like that pick. I have to say, Danny, and this isn't just because you're in the hot seat for just this week and that I usually love making fun of Mick, but I do really like your picks this week.
Thanks so much.
Anything looking at them now, the one that worries me is that Japan, after talking to Stephen, that Japan might actually beat Scotland by more than 10 points.
It's true, that four-day turner.
I'm more up for that game now to see Japan hammer Scotland than Ireland actually beat Samoa, I think.
I know. We'll see. Denmark, Switzerland, both teams need, they both need a result. There is such a huge game for them. I think there'll be goals. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like any time you back anything with the Ireland football team that's not a one-all draw, you're asking for trouble. So I'm nervous there, but we'll see.
We'll see, we'll see. If you have any good big shouts yourself, be sure to get in touch. You can email thegaffer@balls.ie. It has to be a 25-1 or greater prediction on Ladbrokes for the weekend. If you get it right, not only will you win the acclaim of everybody in the balls.ie office and all the listeners to the Build Up podcast, but you'll also win yourself two cakes and a sports biography. It's nearly time to go, Donny, but we have got to get our NFL picks first off. Last weekend, as we mentioned, Mick got 2 out of 3. He's actually pretty decent at these, a lot better at them than he is with his rugby knowledge. This week, you're tasked with it. What are your picks, and why are they going to come off?
Yeah, I mean, we've been trashing Mick and his picks so far, I think, throughout the pod, but it is worth saying that he's consistently pulling 2 out of 3 games right here, which is good work. And he's left on an interesting week, so I've looked around the slate of fixtures. I know Mick likes to pick against the spread. I'm going to buck his tradition. I'm going to pick an interesting game, I think. For people who like points and high scoring, there's a brilliant game on this weekend between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Houston Texans. Just two of the best quarterbacks, most exciting teams offensively in the league going head-to-head. I'm going to advise people to take the over on the over-under bet here, which is 55 points. I could see this game being 35-30 or something ludicrous like that. I think it's going to be touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. So I'm going plus 55 in the KC-Houston game. That's my first NFL pick.
Interesting. That's the first over-under pick I think we've had so far this season, the ball being against the spread. So that's an interesting one. Chiefs, I don't know much about American football, but I know that the Chiefs are absolutely electric. So I'm going to agree with you there, Donny.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I mean, Houston would have, I think they got closer. They went over 55 points last week against Atlanta on their own. So, and Kansas City, yeah, Patrick Mahomes, they lost their first game of the season last Sunday against the Colts. So they're going to be looking for some revenge. And I just think this game is going to be a wire to wire shootout. So it should be a really fun game on Sunday to watch.
Second game, what have you got?
Okay, so I got to go into we got to talk about the Dolphins.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The Dolphins to lose against the spread, as always, a guaranteed winner.
Okay, so let me just talk through some things. I'm coming at this from a different perspective, but I'm open to being convinced otherwise. So this week, two of the worst teams in NFL history will play each other. Your beloved Miami Dolphins will be playing the Washington Redskins. Washington fired their coach after an atrocious loss to the Patriots on Sunday. So they brought in this a man named Bill Callahan, who is, I think, their offensive line coach as a sort of interim coach. So it's two teams who are complete shambles. Now, the Dolphins have had a bye week, so you kind of forget how much of a shambles they were, and it's sort of like they've actually picked up momentum by not playing, if you know what I mean. So I look at the spread of this game is Washington are somehow favorites by 3.5 points, even though they're really like they have the worst vibe about them, of it, worse than any team in the NFL this going into the week. The Dolphins have been cured a bit because we haven't seen them play. Dolphins are at home. My heart is telling me this is going to be a Dolphins win.
Whoa.
Their first win of the year, but the Dolphins have made it clear that they want to lose all of their games. They've assembled one of the worst teams in NFL history, and their hope is to get the number one pick in the NFL draft. And there's a few NFL teams who have no wins. So I just wonder, like the Dolphins, I think are the better team with the better juju, but Washington, yeah, they're also a very bad team. So what happens when, like, this is a fascinating game. It's kind of the opposite of the KC-Houston game, which is going to have so much NFL firepower in it. This is like two of the worst teams, both of whom want to lose the game.
This doubles, I think, as our get hyped this week. Yeah. Because this game, that like you look at a Dolphins game, you're like, how in the name of God are you meant to get hyped about a Dolphins game?
Yeah.
But this game has so much writing on it.
Exactly.
At the opposite end of the table. This is like the race for the worst team. It's almost like the Man United-Newcastle game last weekend in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I want to back the draw. That's very unusual for an NFL game to finish as a tie, but part of me thinks that the two teams who are equally inept, it might just accidentally end up as a draw, but it will definitely throw mixed picks off. So I feel like I have a sort of moral obligation. Okay, I'm going to stick with the theme of this podcast, which is to bet against the Miami Dolphins against the spread. So I'm going to go. I've talked myself into Washington -3.5 against Miami. on Sunday.
You won't regret it, Donny. Won't regret it. But if it goes wrong, then myself and Mick might get sacked from this podcast and you'll have to present it on your own next week.
Fair enough.
So you'd really be cheering on that the Dolphins end up being beaten against the spread. That's grand. So Redskins -3.5 against the Dolphins. Your last pick this week, what is it?
Yeah, it's a very interesting week of games. For people who like to back smartly and bet against the spread, there's two interesting games. The Packers are playing the Lions. And also the Rams are playing the 49ers. These are two intense divisional games. There are also two teams, four of the top five teams who are with records against the spread. So these are teams that are really good to gamble on, playing each other. So I'm going to clear all that out. And Minnesota are hosting the Philadelphia Eagles in Minnesota on Sunday. Interesting conversation around how good or how bad Minnesota might be. They're very Jekyll and Hyde. They tend to play very good against bad teams and very bad against good teams. I think the Eagles are a pretty good team, and I think Minnesota's in trouble here. So somehow the bookies have Minnesota as three-point favorites. I'm going, and I'm backing the Eagles +3 in Minneapolis. I think the Eagles are just going to do it, and they're going to put it up to Kirk Cousins and company. So let me take the Eagles +3.
Donny, I don't know if any of these picks are going to come off, but I like your confidence. Thanks. Like your explanations. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the picks, and thank you very much for standing in for Mick this week. You've done a stellar job, I might say.
Thanks for having me, Mick. Mark.
you were doing a brilliant job right up until that moment when you got my name wrong.
That's it.
On that bombshell, I think it's time to go and get ready for the sport weekend. Thank you everyone for listening. Don't forget, like we mentioned, if you are having a bet this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for more information. You can get in touch with the show by tweeting us or getting in touch on Facebook or Instagram at @BallsDOTIE. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, be sure to do. You can find us by searching The Build Up on balls.ie and all good podcast apps. But until next week, mind yourself.